On a stormy winter afternoon in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, a young teacher walked into her apartment to escape a nor'easter and never walked out again. By nightfall, she'd be found on the kitchen floor with 20 stab wounds inside a locked apartment. Police called it suicide. Her family calls it impossible, and the truth has been trapped somewhere between the snow, the timeline, and the contradictions ever since. Welcome back to Macabre Mondays, where mystery meets the macabre with your favorite Deadly Mary duo. I'm Ale.
And I'm Tom.
Your guides through the strange, the sinister, and the
spooky. Oh, I see what you did there.
Remember we used to do like, spooky what? Yeah. Every time. We really appreciate you guys just holding off and waiting for us as we maneuver this new chapter without one of our third four-legged besties, but he is running wild and free.
Yes.
Over the Rainbow Bridge, so. But we are here today because we've got an episode for you guys. For Tom as well.
That was
the space. I know, I'm a little bit all over the place. It's my, I don't know what to call it, to be honest.
Yeah.
Yeah, but anyways, today, where do you think we are going to, Tom?
Take me home, country roads, West Virginia.
No.
Damn. Minnesota.
No, but that's a good one.
Mississippi.
No.
I give up.
We are going to fly, eagles fly,
on the road to victory.
I knew you were
going
to like
that. You actually know part of the song.
I know. I think that's all I know. I don't know the rest of it, though.
I'm the most proud husband ever right now. And they're playing right now.
Oh, yes. Okay. I was like...
Obviously not at the time you guys are listening to this at 5 a.m. on Monday morning, but at the time we're recording, they are playing.
Tom's like, so how long is this going to be? Because we've got the games on tonight.
You guys don't understand. I never get to watch the games live because, one, I will not be a fault at the spending $80, then the additional whatever on the Red Zone,
well,
on YouTube
so
TV.
Subscriptions,
like,
and
you have
add-ons
to have this subscription with this add-on just to be able to watch the game. I don't want that.
We're just going to have to go out to a
I'm about
bar.
To buy an antenna again.
We should. You can't go wrong with going back to the OGs. Back to OGs. And I'm sure a lot of people probably have antennas still, my mom included.
I could see that.
Yeah, my mother included. But yes, we are going to Philadelphia, born and raised. Oh, most of my days. Right. Okay, to Philadelphia, Pennsylvania.
Woohoo!
On a snowy January day in 2011. Caw, caw.
That was definitely not as we were on the road to Super Bowl, so. Yeah.
Oh,
we
yeah, no, in 2011. This was 2011. Yeah, this is way back in the wind. Well, let's dive in.
Let's do it.
Ellen Ray Greenberg was born June 23rd of 1983. She was the only child of Josh and Sandy Greenberg, and she grew up in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, surrounded by lots of family and friends and a childhood filled with love and laughter. A lot of her friends always say that she is just a joy to be around. Mm-hmm. She's super kind. She's very loving. She's just a sweethearted all around. She earned her undergraduate degree in communications, then went on to complete a master's degree in education at Temple University. In 2011, when she was 27, she was a first grade teacher at Juniata Park Academy in Philadelphia, PA. Now guys, I always do my best to research the pronunciations of them, okay? So if I'm saying it wrong, apologies. I'm doing my best here. But, so she's a first grade teacher at this school. And it's a job that her colleagues said that she was pretty much like meant for. They described her as very calm, very centered, patient, and deeply caring. She was the kind of teacher who made anxious little kids like feel safe. And honestly, like she just looks like a joy. She looks like a bundle of sweet.
I was gonna say she looks like your typical what I would expect in a teacher.
Yeah.
Just you can kind of get off the smile and everything.
Yeah. Her energy, just in the photos, she just gives off this like warm and
yeah,
like calming demeanor to her. She also kind of reminds me of a favorite teacher I might have had in like second grade. You know what I mean? Like, she gives that kind of that aura. Her friends described her as super joyful, fun-loving, beautiful inside and out, and she was just a good person in such a difficult world. Back in 2007, Ellen agreed to go on this blind date, and that's when she met Sam Goldberg, an associate director for NBC Sports, which I also found his LinkedIn. He also worked at the PGA.
Oh.
Yes. The two hit it off immediately. They talked for about a month, and then Sam flew her down to Charleston, South Carolina, where he was working at the time. They became pretty much inseparable after this. Over the next 3 years, they ended up building this life together. Their relationship appeared very stable and committed. Her family really liked him, and they were just happy that she was happy, which is all that really mattered to mom and dad.
They just feel like that's what most parents want.
Right, yeah. They just want their, you know, be successful, do something that they love, meet somebody that they can settle down. Yeah, not stress about anything.
Yeah.
In June of 2010, Sam proposed to Ellen during a beach trip to California. Very romantic, very scenic, beautiful engagement.
Okay.
Ellen said yes, which she was pretty much over the moon. There's a documentary about this story on Hulu. Okay, I'm not going to say any more right now because we're still early on. But in the documentary, her friends say that she was so excited to get married. Like, she is so excited to get married. She just wants to... She just wants to do all the wedding fairy tale things, and she is so ready to do them.
Okay.
Okay. Sam and Ellen end up moving into a modern apartment building called the Venice Lofts.
Ooh, this sounds bougie.
It overlooks the... And this is where I might butcher this river's name.
Damn, you didn't even give it a shot.
Schuylkill River. S-C-H-U-Y-L-K-I-L-L. Schuylkill River.
Have you ever been to Schuylkill River?
No, I don't think that's a place I'd want to go, though. If I heard somebody say, have you ever been to the Schuylkill River? Yeah. But they lived in this apartment building called the Venice Lofts, overlooking this beautiful river, and they began planning their wedding, which they were actually setting it up for August of 2011. Mind you, this is December
2010.
Oh, this is June 2010. Yes, June 2010. There's pretty much like a year. They're like, you know what? We're going to plan
it. We're doing it then.
And you already know wedding planning is stressful.
Yo. Don't even get me started. Good luck.
I will say it's super stressful. I remember the minute we were done saying I do at the altar and we were walking away and I was like, oh God, thank God. Like, all right, now we just party. Like, now we don't have to worry about anything else.
Drink as much as you can, because I think both of us only had a drink each, and then I don't even think we finished our champagne.
No, but we were, but also I will say, if you do drink, you just gotta remember there's cameras, there's videographers, or whatever. You also don't want to look sloshed on these cameras or these photos that you're spending thousands of dollars on just to get captured the day.
To be honest, also make sure that your catering packs you a nice little to-go box, because we thought we were getting one and we forgot.
We forgot.
We didn't get one.
We were starving at the end of the night.
We got home, back to the hotel, jumped on the bed celebrating, and then we shared a $5 beefy five-layer burrito.
But we didn't even order it. No. My brother just happened. No, my brother asked us. He's like, do you guys want anything from Taco Bell? And we were like,
I answered too late. And he said, here's a five-layer.
Yeah, and he happened to have an extra like five-layer. And I was like, thank God.
It was damn good.
Because in the hotel only had like their concession stand. It wasn't really anything crazy. And I was like, dude, at this point, I'll just eat sleep for dinner.
We were also in the middle of nowhere, Indiana. So everything closes.
Yeah,
at,
but
like,
it was so
nine.
Cute. Yeah, so but anyways, awesome. So you can imagine wedding planning is stressful, okay? If you haven't done it, you've probably heard about it, and it can be very stressful. Now, around late 2010, Ellen's parents noticed something was kind of off with Ellen. Their daughter, who's usually very cheerful and grounded, she seemed increasingly anxious, very stressed, and uneasy. She told co-workers and friends that she was just very overwhelmed at school, report cards were due soon, and she was worried about meeting deadlines. She also confided in people that wedding planning was adding a lot of pressure. So, makes sense. I know you're sounding skeptical.
I'm getting sus.
You're getting super sus right now. Well, according to this A&E article that I found, she had even asked to come home to her parents in Harrisburg because she was feeling mentally and emotionally drained. And I even read that she was even asking her, like a cousin of hers, if she could come stay with her sometime. And when her cousin asked if Sam was coming too, she really didn't answer. So it's kind of weird. I also feel like...
I thought I was getting sus to the right person.
Sounds like I knew it. No, but I thought that was very interesting because to me, I'm like, okay, something must be going on with you and Sam because, I don't know, I try to put myself in the shoes, right? And if I was fine with you and I asked my mom, hey, I want to come home, like, I just want to get away from all this. One, I must be really going through it.
Yeah.
And two... not mentioning you're coming with is just kind of
That's a red flag.
It's just interesting. Yeah, right. It's just kind of It's
sure,
just kind
we'll
of
call
like
it interesting for now.
It's intriguing. It's very intriguing. It's just
fine.
To me,
I'm putting
it's odd.
Cautionary flag on the play.
Flag on the play. Well, her father made her a deal. Listen, you'll see a psychiatrist. And they'd revisit whether she could take a break from teaching. And at this point, her dad was, his main concern was making sure that his daughter is happy. She's fine. She's feeling okay. And that the job is secured. Because she worked all so hard going to school. She's got her master's. Like, she did all this. Like, yeah. To just, like, you know, leave.
To leave.
Right.
And then, yeah.
So, and he's just being a typical
parent.
He's doing
everything
typical,
he can
yes.
to support. Yeah.
And so he's like, all right, we'll have you see a psychiatrist. And then from there, like, we'll revisit if you can take a break from teaching for a bit or something. Which
okay.
They were saying, even in the documentary, their friends that were also colleagues of her at school did say, like, you know, it's stressful. Like, being a teacher is stressful. We've heard of it. My sister's a teacher.
Yeah.
She talks about how stressful it is. There's a lot going on.
There's no way any teacher gets everything they need done within those 8 hours that you're also teaching.
Yeah, you guys are definitely doing more. And I mean, that's what I mean. And you're not getting paid for it. So it's a lot of, it's stressful.
They also don't really get paid well.
No, they don't. Exactly. So now, a longtime friend of Ellen, Erica, she actually stated, I think she was hiding stuff that was going on in her relationship. But again, they didn't know any better because they're only basing off of what Ellen's telling them. And Ellen's saying, like, you know what? I'm really stressed out, which, mind you, could be very much true. She's got wedding planning. She's got school. She's a first time teacher. There's a lot of new norms.
Yeah.
You know,
there's a lot of adjustments.
A lot of adjustments.
All at the same time.
Yes. Now, Ellen did go see a psychiatrist who prescribed her
Clonazepam?
No, Clonopin. Jeez. And Ambien for generalized anxiety disorder.
Okay.
Ellen continued working, planning her wedding, and trying to get a handle of her anxiety. And by all accounts, she seemed very determined to keep moving forward. And then came the storm. A legit nor'eastern.
Oh. Wow.
You're like, you're bracing for impact.
Oh,
this
I was
storm.
Ready.
Yes, you were bracing for impact. So... in Philly, around January of 2011, there was a nor'eastern, very powerful coastal storm.
Oh, I remember this.
I'm sure there's been
many. It went
many,
all the way out to the Midwest, too.
Oh, did it? Okay,
yeah,
well,
it was
that's
a,
interesting.
I remember seeing the videos, too, because the whole East Coast got nailed by the storm.
Yeah, yeah. So if nobody really knows what, like, a nor'eastern is, because I looked it up, too, because I know what it is, but, like, I was like, yeah, how do I put it into words? I just know it's, like, it's a heavy-ass storm.
Yeah.
it comes out of nowhere. It could be, like, a squall.
Like, snowdrifts,
yeah.
It was wild.
Heavy snow. It could even be, like, could trigger flooding. It could knock out, like, the power grid off of a city. Like, it's just, like, an intense, intense, fierce
also,
northeast wind storm.
Just want to add one additional point. If you don't know what a squall is, look it up. I didn't know what that was until I moved to the East Coast.
Yes.
And then I remember my phone went off one day saying squall alert. And I was like, what the hell is this? No joke. It was clear, sunny. And then out of nowhere, all of a sudden, it was blizzard conditions for the next 15 minutes.
Yeah. So
and
it says
it cleared up.
A squall is a sudden, intense and short-lived burst of wind, often accompanied by rain, snow or sleet. So imagine all that.
Yeah.
Imagine all that. Yes. It gets a little, it gets brutal. It gets brutal on the East Coast.
Okay.
Apologies. Well, Philadelphia was being hit with one on January 26th of 2011, which means schools are going to close early. clearing roads is going to be heavy. People are going to be out here sea salting everything. Okay.
Sea salt.
And obviously they're going to send people home, like as many people as you can to wait out the storm.
Everything closes down when shit like this hits.
And of course, Ellen being a teacher, she's one of the ones that gets sent home because, I mean, she works at the school. School's closed. I mean, I'd be excited too, though.
Yeah, I get so excited. There was no VR virtual schooling.
Oh, I was like, VR? You mean remote classes?
Whatever, yeah. Like, school, we lived it good. School closed back in the day.
And that's it.
School was it.
You don't got to work.
You didn't have laptops at home.
Yeah. I mean, you did, but you didn't do school. Yeah, it wasn't a thing. Yeah, the COVID really opened that up. COVID really opened that up. All right, so let me take you on the accounts of January 26th of 2011. It's 7 a.m. Ellen wakes up like she always does. She calls her mom. Usual ritual, usual check-in. Nothing out of the ordinary. Very normal. Nothing unusual. She gets ready for work. She heads to school.
Okay.
1:15, school closes early. We got the nor'eastern.
Go home.
Right? We've got the nor'easterns out there. Because of the weather, the school district dismissed students early. Ellen leaves at 1:15 p.m.
Okay.
Okay, I've got everything timestamped based off of everything that I could find, just to make it easier. She even has her friend texts her like, yeah, you're getting out early. And Ellen replies like, yeah, thank God. Right, like, thank goodness. Because, I mean, who wouldn't be excited? 1:26, security footage shows that Ellen is stopping at Manayunk gas station to fuel her tank. She's going to top off whatever's left because that's also
smart.
I don't know.
Smart.
Yeah, if you don't know, but like usually when you, especially on the East Coast, like if there is a blizzard coming, you got to top everything off. That's why everybody goes a little bit crazy and they like, there's no more toilet paper. Everybody runs out of milk.
No. Toilet paper was only a COVID thing.
I know, but I mean, like people just kind of go a little bit nuts.
Haywire.
Yes, haywire. And they're like, you know what? I need to stock up on chicken broth. Like, I need to stock up on bars of soap.
Even though, just to be fair, even the blizzard of 78, nobody was without groceries for longer than maybe a week or 2 weeks.
I know. It's just the worry of it, of it coming across. So I totally get that. Yes. But I agree. Sometimes I'm like, guys, it's just one day. We'll be okay. Like, maybe just don't wait last minute to do everything. But I get it. You know, I've been there. I'm not perfect. I do that too sometimes.
Plan and
I get
prep.
It. Yeah, exactly. Plan and prep. Probably.
Oh my god.
It's so bad. Okay. So 1:26, she's at the gas station. She's topping her gas tank off. Great. She goes back home. She returns to her apartment. She settles into her routine. Changes into comfy clothes.
Nice.
She's grading papers. She's responding to emails.
That red ink going on that paper.
She's like F A B C D F F A A, right?
Mm-hmm.
Great. Normal, ordinary, nothing is unusual here, okay? She's even beginning to, like, cut fruit for a snack or to, like, make lunch the next day. So she's prepped. 3:47, Ellen sends a text from her phone. 4:45 p.m. Sam leaves the apartment around 4:45 to go to the gym. To the gym that's in the in the building. Okay. And he also texts her saying that he is going to the gym. Surveillance at the apartment building does capture Sam entering the on-site gym. So yeah, he did go. 4:46, just a minute after, Ellen uses her laptop. Great. 5:28, almost an hour later, Sam comes back to come back to the apartment. He's done at the gym. I'm gonna go back home.
I'm just waiting for the damn shooter drop.
Key card data shows Sam re-entering the building around 5:28. Okay, which by the way, guys, I did my best to find the timestamps. Okay, if I'm off by a couple minutes, just know that this is roughly around the same time that this all happened. He goes to the apartment, to the door, 6:03, and finds that when he tries to open the door, the latch is closed from inside the house. Okay, what do you call those? Like the swing?
Like the security latch, yeah.
Yeah, the swing latch, right? Like, bam, no one's going to come in.
Yeah.
Great, pin that. Pin it. Flag. Penny? Flag on the play.
No, that's not a flag on the
play.
That's
not a flag.
Just a...
How would you say that in like football terms?
Highlight reel.
Okay, highlight.
Highlight. I don't know.
I'm like, fumble. Okay. Within this next hour, it's like 5:30, right? He's trying to get into his house. He's like, what the hell? The door's unlocked, latched from inside. That's weird. Sam starts banging on the door. He's calling out for Ellen. He tries tries the handle again. He's like, hello, banging on the door. No answer. He starts texting Ellen. Between 5:30 and 6:30, Sam sends Ellen a string of messages. Hello, what are you doing? Open the door. I'm getting pissed. You better have a good excuse. Ah, what the fuck? You have no idea. Sending all these type of messages, okay? So he's pissed.
Yeah.
He's pissed. Which I was like, weird flex, but okay.
Yeah.
Calling her nonstop, and he says that Ellen isn't answering him. He's banging on the door, nothing. By the way, this is all happening. Think about it. He's in an apartment building. Don't go any further than that. Thank you. He's in an apartment building.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously he's going to have neighbors. There were neighbors that did hear him banging on the door, okay, like him yelling out for her name. And they just immediately assumed that they're probably in a, you know, they're engaged. They're probably having an argument or something. I don't know what's going on.
Loud as argument.
Sam then goes to the front desk to ask a doorman, because they have a front desk concierge, I guess you can call a doorman, if he can go up with him to help open the door because she's not answering. But the doorman tells Sam, well, I can't do that because per policy of the building, he's not allowed to leave the front desk, only for the police or like the fire department. So only for immediate first responders. Okay. So it's the only time he can leave his post, and he's not doing that otherwise. But he said, let me try ringing her. Let me see if I can get her on the phone or something. So he's calling, still not answering. Nothing's going on. Sam leaves, goes back up to the front, to 603, room, to his apartment. Yeah. Trying to doing the same thing. He ends up coming back to the front desk at some point within that hour. So this is all happening within this hour before 6:30, and tells the doorman that he's gonna knock the door down. He's like, I'm gonna knock it down. She's not answering.
Okay.
And he's like mad. Like the doorman's like, he's angry. Like he's like literally like, I don't know what the hell's going on. He's not like all this. At this point, after an hour of unanswered texts and talking to the building staff, and Sam decides to break into the house, into the apartment. He enters the apartment and he finds his beloved fiance Ellen, whom he loves so much, on the kitchen floor, propped against the cabinets on the floor.
Damn.
A 10-inch serrated knife still is like in her chest, like stabbed.
Damn.
Sticking out of her chest. Fruit and knives are like scattered on the counter because she was cutting up some fruit. She was prepping something. And then we get the 911 call.
I just walked to my apartment. My fiance's on the floor with blood everywhere.
What is the address?
4601 Flat Rock Road. Please come. Help.
4601
Flat Rock Road.
Is this a house or apartment?
Oh, no. Oh, no. It's an apartment. Please hurry, please.
Where is she bleeding from?
I don't know. I can't tell. She's...
No. So you have to calm yourself down in order to get you some help.
I'm sorry. I don't know. I'm looking at her right now. I can't see anything. There's nothing broken. She's bleeding. Ellie!
You don't know where she's bleeding from? Can't see where the blood's coming from?
I think her head. I think she hit her head, I think. But it's not everywhere. It's everywhere.
She might have fallen. Do you know what happened?
She may have slipped. There's blood on the table. Her face is a little purple.
Okay, hold on for rescue for her. Stay on the phone.
I went downstairs to go work out. I came back up. The door was latched. My fiance's inside. She wasn't answering. So after about a half hour, I decided to break it down. I see her now just on the floor with blood. She's not responding.
Okay, is she breathing? Look at her chest. I need you to calm down, and I need you to look at her chest. It's really.
I don't think she is.
Listen to me. Someone's on the way. Look at her chest. Is she flat on her back?
She's on her back. Do I bring her?
Look at her chest and tell me if it's going up and down, up and down.
I don't see her moving.
Okay, do you know how to do CPR?
I don't.
Okay, I can tell you what to do, okay, until they get there. I want you to keep her
phone. Oh, God.
Hello?
Yeah, hi, okay.
Are you willing to do CPR with me over the phone until they get
there? I have to, right?
Okay, so get her flat on her back, bare her chest, okay? You want to rip her shirt off, okay? Down by her side.
Oh my God. Ellie, please.
Listen, you can't freak out, sir, because you
okay, I'm trying not to. Her shirt won't come off. It's a zipper.
Rip
oh my
off.
God. She stabbed herself.
Where?
She fell in a knife. Oh no, her knife's sticking out.
Her what?
There's a knife sticking out of her heart.
Oh, she stabbed herself?
I guess so. I don't know where she fell on it. I don't know.
Okay, well, don't touch it.
Okay, so I just let her down here now? I mean, what do I do?
No, I mean, you can't, if the knife is in her chest, it's going to be kind of hard for you to do CPR at this time.
Oh, no. Oh, my goodness. Okay.
Police, which operator?
277.
Is someone coming here?
Yes, they are. You said 4601 Flat Rock, right?
Yes.
Okay, someone's on the way. And the knife is still inside?
Wait, sir, what?
The knife is still inside of her?
Yes, I didn't take it out.
Was it her chest or what area?
It's in her chest. It's like, it looks like it's right in her heart.
Okay, someone's on the way out there, okay? Just get
Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
How old is she?
She's 27.
27. And there's no sign of life at all?
No, please don't be. What?
Bend her under her arm and tell me if she responds to pain.
She's. Ellie! She's not. Her arm and her hands are still warm. I don't know what that means, but there's blood everywhere. I mean.
I know, but you can't, and the knife is still inside of her. How far? Can you see how far it went in?
It looks pretty deep.
Okay.
It looks three, and it's a long knife.
Don't touch anything,
okay?
I'm not touching anything. I can't believe this, though.
So wait, it was just you there with her?
We're the only ones here.
And she ran in the door, you said, latched it shut?
No, I went downstairs to work out, mm-hmm. And when I came back up, the door was latched.
Oh.
Like, it was, you know, it wasn't like, it was, you know, it was like locked from the inside, and I'm yelling. And so I was yelling.
Was your house broken
into? No.
So there's no sign of a break-in?
No sign of a break-in at all. I mean, there will be when you get here, because I had to break the latch, but to get in.
Okay, 4601.
Okay. Let me hear your thoughts. What are you thinking about based off of that initial?
I guess I have to, right? Yeah, that's what you fucking do. Oh, sorry.
It's okay.
Yeah, that's what you do for your loved one, or anyone for that matter, that you come across that is unconscious and not breathing, is CPR.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
very interesting.
And then, how do you not see a knife? How do you not see a knife? I don't know where the blood's coming from. Must
Weird.
Be her head.
Yeah.
That what?
It's interesting.
How do you not see a knife? And then you're just, I can't get her shirt off. Oh, it's a zipper. What?
I know.
My guy. I'm sorry.
Wait.
Hold on. Coming from a person that unfortunately on his honeymoon got to watch his wife pass out.
Oh, yeah.
And initially went into that fight or flight reaction of what the hell do I do? My wife is dead. I can tell you right now, my mind wouldn't have looked at her shirt and gone, it's a zipper.
I also don't think you would have been like, I guess I have to do CPR, right?
No, because I'm sorry, but instantly, and obviously I come from a different background with some of my knowledge, but
yeah,
for me, the minute she went down, instantly, I freaked out, won't lie. I initially kind of cried and was freaking out, but then instantly I went, oh, heat. She's not 8. Heat exhaustion, more than likely. And then I went
into
that.
Point.
That to me, even without any type of background, your mind to me shouldn't immediately go to and don't get me wrong, everyone's different. But in this situation, the way he comes off at times as if he's panicking, but then he sounds so calm.
It's interesting.
It's very suspicious.
Suspicious. Okay. Very interesting.
Additional flag on the play.
On the play. Okay. Yes, I agree. I also do get that not everyone's gonna react differently in traumatic situations or heightened situations. That's completely understood too. It is just very interesting hearing his 911 call. Like you said, some moments he seems panicked, some moments he's like not panicked. But again, who knows? That could just be how he expresses himself. But that's just playing devil's advocate, but yes. No, I agree. And then you saying, I love how you noticed the whole, she has a knife sticking out of her chest.
Oh, she stabbed herself.
Right.
That's where your mind went, was that she stabbed herself?
Yeah, that's interesting. What did you think about that? Yeah.
I genuinely, I think if I was in that situation, my mind wouldn't have immediately gone to she stabbed herself. Mm-hmm. It would have gone to
that's a good point.
Somehow she's got a knife in her. I don't know what the hell she got it, but there is a knife inside of her right now, and there's a mess all over the kitchen. Like, I don't know what the fuck happened, but something happened here.
Okay, very good. I love your immediate thoughts. Okay. Yes. Okay. Or saying that she fell on the knife, right?
Yeah, I don't... I just... Yeah. I also want to...
It's just
I don't
interesting.
Know.
It's interesting. It's odd.
Even if it's I had a klutzy wife, which I don't, and maybe I'm lying partially, I don't think I would have thought my wife would fall on a knife.
Right.
I feel like my wife has fairly good understanding of how to use... I don't know. How are you standing? There's just too many things that...
Very good points. You know, very good points. And the other thing to think of, I'm going to post photos on socials. Some of them may be a bit graphic, so please trigger warning with all that. I always put a trigger warning slide before, but just giving you a heads up. When he came in and he saw in the apartment, she is literally slouched like on the floor. So her back is against the bottom cabinets. So she's like slouched. So to me, I just find it weird that like she fell on her knife, but her knife is sticking out of her.
Okay. Yeah, actually, you know, that's a good another point. How would she have fallen? Did she fall and then
lean
like,
back?
Bounce back?
Right.
It's not a video game.
Because the way that she is laying, she is found, unfortunately. She's like slumped. Like her legs are practically, are just straight out slumped. Okay.
Yeah.
Now
no.
We'll get more into it.
Okay, let's go.
Okay, let's do it. Now, according to the doorman, who they also interviewed in the Hulu documentary, the fire department showed up before EMS or police.
Okay.
They went upstairs, they saw Ellen's body, and they came back down the elevator looking very disturbed. And the doorman said that they said something like, you don't need an EMT, you need a homicide detective.
Oh.
So they
shit.
Immediately are like, the minute they see this, they're like, something happened in here, and this does not look good.
Yeah.
Okay. The fire department said this.
Yeah.
Like, that's insane. This is the first person that's seeing the scene right now, other than Sam, because
what
Sam saw it
you?
First. Okay. 6:40, paramedics arrive. I could be a little off with those timestamps, but it happened after 6:30. Paramedics and the police arrive and pronounce Ellen dead within minutes. Unfortunately, she did not survive. When Philadelphia police finally entered the apartment, they asked Sam about what happened. And the story that he tells the police is exactly that. He was gone for the hour right before he left. He saw her. He came home and the door was locked. It was latched, right? The little latchy thing.
Mm-hmm.
He stated that the doorman came with him to knock the door down.
False.
He claimed that, no, and the reason why we know that is false is because there is security footage and the doorman did not go with him.
In that case, challenge flag thrown, review the footage, confirmed.
Highlight.
Play overturned.
His claim that no one else could have entered because the latch was on there when he tried opening the door. Okay, all right. And he also was making statements to the police about Ellen's anxiety and how she wasn't doing good mentally. So that's why he's like, she stabbed herself.
I wonder why.
And then the belief that there's this belief that with the storm outside, it's unlikely that there was like an intruder, right? So these are the facts that we're, this is pretty much what he tells them. Everything that I told you is pretty much what he tells them, right?
Okay.
But
all
he
right.
says that the doorman goes with him to the front door to their apartment door to knock down.
False, buddy.
To knock down the door.
Liar.
That's not true. Now, they kept zeroing the police. They kept zeroing on one detail specifically, the broken latch.
I was going to say, let me guess, when the police got there, latch not broken.
No, latch is broken.
Damn.
Latch is broken.
Okay, okay.
That's the one, pretty much one of the main details that they were really stuck on, where they're like, well, the door is locked, so like she must have done this to herself. That's literally what they were going
on.
Damn. Now, the latch... since it's closed from the inside, right? Because Sam is saying, they're just taking Sam's word because Sam was the one that was there. And obviously he's the one that lives with her. And they're like, what happened? You came, you saw, you called, you conquered. Now the latch, the officers assumed could only be locked by someone on the inside of the apartment. They saw no forced entries, according to Sam's narrative, a knife sticking out of Ellen's chest. She was also in a pool of blood, like half crouched on against the cabinet, just bleeding pretty much from everywhere.
Okay.
A half-prepared fruit snack, like she was doing something on the counter.
Okay.
And things looked a little bit disheveled. There was no suicide note. There were no signs of struggle. We also saw a storm outside. And they have one anxious young woman who is just...
dead.
Yep. Unfortunately.
Okay.
And before they examined anything at this scene, before they brought in any crime scene specialists, before they really took any type of photos or anything, they, based off of all these facts that I told you, immediately ruled the manner of death as suicide.
Of course they did.
Just like that. They're like, oh, she definitely committed suicide.
I feel like this is what we see with any case that makes it to our podcast.
Now, because police called this a suicide right off the bat, just based off of Sam's accounts of what happened, the next decisions that were taken were catastrophic.
Mm.
The apartment was released back to the management almost immediately. And the very next day after this all happens, Sam's uncle, who is also a lawyer, by the way, called management to come in to say, like, hey, I need to come in and just get, like, gather a few things from the apartment. Now, because of this, the building manager didn't want the family to come in and see the crime scene with blood, and it would be distressing. She calls the police. She asks if anyone is allowed to go back into the apartment because it's a crime scene,
mm-hmm.
which she does state in the, and she stated in interviews and stuff like that, but even in the Hulu documentary, like she says, she's like, this has never happened to me before, so I'm trying to, she's trying to do the best she can, cover all the bases.
Smart that she called the police to get verification. Mm-hmm.
You were saying?
Smart on her part that she called the police to verify, because I feel like genuinely some management and just people in this situation probably wouldn't think I should call to get verification that somebody can go back in, especially if they were told, hey, apartment's back in your hands.
Yeah, yeah. And she wasn't there, like she had stated, she wasn't there that night that it happened, but the next morning, like she's obviously like dealing with all this stuff. Now, when she calls the police to ask if anyone can go back in there, because she knows, you know, it's a crime scene, the police pretty much just end up telling her, like, it was ruled a suicide and to refer to... They literally gave her a crime scene cleanup crew phone number.
Oh.
Here you go. Call them. They'll come and clean that and clean the apartment.
Well, great.
Well, she calls. They come and clean. And pretty much, we're not just talking about a regular cleaner. Like a housemaid.
These are like the crime scene cleaners.
Like they are.
This
cleaning
is their
up.
Specialty.
This is their specialty. They know exactly what they need to be using.
They know how to desanitize.
This is literally their
job.
They
know how to make sure that it's properly
remove fingerprints.
Removed,
you're moving blood. You're moving stains. You know. So pretty much that the cleanup ends up destroying the whole scene itself.
Hmm.
They clean up blood evidence, batter patterns, footprints, fingerprints, knives, the knife placements, because when you're in the apartment and they found her, she had like certain knives just kind of scattered.
Mm-hmm.
Like there's some, just, you could just tell there's a little bit of a disarray there. Pretty much they clean up anything that could help give us a better understanding as to why, how, or even like, what did she do? Like what happened prior? Like what, we don't really know any answers because we don't have, we didn't have a preserved crime scene. Now, because her whole family is shocked and devastated to know that, one, she's no longer here, but two, she apparently...
The whole crime scene just got...
Well, no, she committed suicide. To them, they're like, that's so not like her. That's weird. Like, they're also processing.
And now we got no more answers that we can get.
And they can't process anything from it. So they're like, oh... But because the police concluded suicide based off of Sam's stories just right off the bat, the scene was pretty much destroyed and scrubbed away.
Yep.
Yeah. Now, Sam's uncle, who, like I said, is a lawyer, she was allowed into the apartment.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I think he was like, he came with Sam. I think he did come with Sam. I'm not entirely sure, but just know they're there. They went back to the apartment the next day to collect some items. The building manager goes with them to let them in. And she also was recording what she could see, what she could find, because she also didn't want to be liable about certain things either.
Anything.
She knows it's a very sensitive subject.
Also very smart.
Very smart. They're in the apartment, she said, maybe like 15 minutes. And all that his uncle takes, Ellen's laptop, Ellen's phone, and possibly could be some other type of personal items or electronics. But that's all they take, which I find interesting because, one, you're not even Ellen's...
You didn't
Ellen's
get anything for Sam. You just got everything of hers.
For Ellen, and you're Sam's uncle. You're
yeah,
not...
Yeah, and you're a lawyer.
And you're a lawyer. It's interesting.
Hmm.
These facts are getting a little interesting.
No flag on the play, but we're marking it cautionary. Now we're going over to soccer. I'm giving you a yellow card as a warning.
So interesting. Okay. Cool. Now, the next day, Ellen is Jewish. And so it's a Jewish custom that I was seeing that when someone passes away, everything moves rather quickly. Like they host a funeral pretty soon. Like it's happening within like the first day or two. Yes. Right when her family is at the funeral, okay, her dad is about to go up to give his eulogy. He learns that the medical examiner, Dr. Marlon Osborne, who performed Ellen's autopsy, changed it from suicide to homicide.
Oh, shit.
He documents 20 stab wounds, both from the
Holy shit!
From the front and the back. On Ellen, there's bruises on her body in different stages of healing. There's a stab wound that penetrates close to her spinal cord. And a stab wound that was deep into her heart, from what I was seeing, in her chest.
Oh my gosh.
I saw some type of, some of them say there was, or maybe there was no hesitation wounds from what I was reading, or maybe I misunderstood that, but from what I was reading, there was no hesitation wounds.
Yeah.
Okay. Multiple forceful stabs that would cause immediate motor dysfunction. No clear indication that she could physically continue stabbing herself after certain injuries. So with all this, Dr. Osborne's first documented ruling was homicide. Mm-hmm. Now, the most controversial meeting in this case, from what I was seeing, okay, because how did that go from suicide to homicide? What's going on here? Something's going on. That's interesting. Mm-hmm. Okay. After the autopsy, detectives end up meeting with Dr. Osborne, and they tell him that Ellen had anxiety. They're pretty much laying the case out for him. They're like, she was stressed, because I think they also take into account, medical examiners also take into account the mental cause of death based off of all the police investigation, because how are they also going to be able to kind of corroborate a certain story? Now, I don't think it's like 100% everything that they base it off, but I don't know. I don't really know. I'm not a medical examiner, okay? But they told him about Ellen's anxiety. She was stressed about teaching, wedding. The door was locked from inside. They're really stuck on this. There was no signs of forced entry other than the fact that Sam had to break into the door. Ellen was alone. Therefore, in view, it's a suicide. The meeting apparently lasted under an hour, and by the time it was over, Dr. Osborne said, okay, I'm going to change the manner of death from homicide to suicide. Back to suicide. Damn. Back to suicide.
Huh.
Now, this would end up altering the next 14 plus years.
Oh. Oh.
This reasoning of it changing to suicide pretty much completely ignores 20 stab wounds, 10 of them from what I was seeing, the back of her neck, multiple deep,
which obviously,
forceful stabs.
If you know anything about human anatomy,
yeah,
a neck stab wound is basically going to paralyze you.
Yeah, no, yeah, especially by the spinal cord. And also, like, from what I was, I'm also like, how do you even?
Yeah, you can't. It's just interesting. I'm sorry, no.
Now, a knife was embedded in her chest, bruising in different healing stages on her body. It was like her arms, legs. There was lack of self. So all this pretty much to say the door was locked, which means it could only be suicide. Okay, case closed. Hmm. Now, while he was trying to get into the apartment, Sam, right, there was something that he didn't tell the police about that night. He made 2 phone calls, actually.
Oh.
Both to relatives who were lawyers, his cousin, who's also a lawyer, and his uncle, who is a lawyer, before he broke into the door.
Hmm.
So that's interesting to me. I also, but then a part of me is like, okay, maybe he called. Okay, here's thus far. Okay. Okay. I'm like, all right. Would it make sense if, let's say they were in an argument before he left to the gym, and I don't know, maybe it was so bad, this argument, that when he was coming back and he saw that the door was locked, that pissed him off because he's already pissed during his argument. And he calls his uncle, who's a lawyer. I find it weird that he calls his cousin as well. I don't know. Maybe he couldn't reach one or the other. I don't know. But he calls both of them. And he probably wants to see. Maybe he tells them about it. I need to knock down the door. Can I get in trouble? I don't know. That's another part that I was like, is that?
No.
But I find it weird.
No.
I find it strange.
I'm sorry. No.
It's hard for me to just brush it off, though.
No. No.
Okay.
I'm on to you.
But it's true. Like, why would you call them? That's interesting.
There's
you're trying to get in the house.
I would call my dad, or I'd go back down to the bellman and say, hey, am I going to get in trouble if I break down this door?
Okay. All right. Well, true. Because it's also another thing. It's like, why call? I don't know. It's just weird. It's just very weird. Okay.
Now, my thing is, for somebody innocent.
Yeah, that's true. My other thing is too, I think I would have, I don't know. I also am like, obviously we're not him, and I know everybody reacts differently. I get that part. It's just really hard for me to wrap my head around the fact that if I was there and I was coming home and I was like, yeah, I'm coming back from the gym, mad or not at you, I would be knocking down that door probably the first 10, 15 minutes.
Yeah.
Because to me, one, I would find it weird that you're not answering. You're mm-hmm. nothing. The latch is closed. You knew I was going out. That's weird. Why would you do that? To me, I would immediately assume, oh my God, something happened. Did he pass out?
Typical thing.
Did he faint?
Typical thought process.
Yeah. Did he have a heart attack? Because
people
I love him.
Innocent.
Because I love him. No, so that's how I think of it too, where I'm like, okay, I find it incredibly strange. A lot of people do, because especially even in the 911 call, it's very
weird. Again, you're so
weird.
Fishy, my
it's
guy.
Fishy. It's fishy. It's fishy. It's fishy. Fishy, fishy, fishy. Now, things to note thus far, okay? Ellen's psychologist later does testify saying that Ellen never expressed suicidal ideation of any kind, not once. So that's interesting, mm-hmm. right? Now, again, who's to say she may not just have said it? Okay, sure. But interesting. She's going for this anxiety that she has, and she needs to see someone to get help. If she's just like this bundle of joy, very kind, very loving, I don't see why she wouldn't express that. If that's it is what she's feeling. She's there to get help, right?
Yes.
But again, some people may be different. Who knows? Now, the latch becomes this entire foundation for the Philadelphia Police Department, right? That's why they're saying it's ruled a suicide. Now, but if the latch was closed, meaning the door was locked from inside, no one else could have gone in or out, meaning that in their minds, right, this had to be suicide. But the building manager does state that it is possible for the latch on the door to have closed by slamming the door shut. She's done it before. It's happened before. She says it is possible. You could have locked the door very, very like forcefully that it could have latched the door over.
Yes.
Okay. So that to me, I'm like, interesting. It's possible. That does lead to.
You can also use a string to pull the latch after you've closed the door.
Yes, I've also seen, I mean, not saying he, I mean, clearly not that we know of, he had a clothing rack hanger. Yeah, hanger, because I've seen people do that.
Yeah, there's plenty of ways to get this thing to,
right.
You know.
I also feel like if you had like a relatively like thin hand, I could probably like, you know what I mean?
That's a no, because when I was younger, I did try that once, and
it did not work. Yeah, okay, that definitely wouldn't work. So, okay, so we've got that. So she says that, so that could be a possibility. Cool. Okay, well, the building doorman, he testified saying that he never went up with Sam. So I don't know why he would say that.
Mm-hmm.
And he even says it in the Hulu document. He's like, I don't want to call anybody a liar, but I did not go up with him.
Yeah, which,
and
again,
the cameras.
I'm sorry. Even if you try to blame it on, well, there was so much of me. No, you're going to fucking remember
okay,
who the
Osborne?
Hell was with you. Like.
Yes. No, I agree. That's my other thing, too, that I'm like, if I'm in this high. I'm in this right now in that moment, I would probably be so high alert that the last thing I'm going to be doing is lying if I really have nothing to lie about. You get what I'm saying?
And again, traumatic events.
Yes, correct.
The minute the traumatic event happens and everything, usually you do not remember every detail right away. However, after your adrenaline's calmed down, typically, coming again from somebody that went through that, I remember every little detail. I remember how she fell, what her eyes looked like, who was behind her, who was near us, how many people were coming near us to help us, and how all that went.
Right.
I remember those distinct details because that's just,
especially
to me,
after.
It's kind of burned into. Yeah. So it's like, it's just, you wouldn't forget a person being with you if it's just versus just you
or
you
group.
with one person.
Yeah.
You're not going to make a mistake on somebody being with you when nobody was with you.
Yeah, no, I agree. And okay. So, and another thing to piggyback off of that you mentioned is usually, we all do it, especially when we're watching movies or TV shows, like, I would have done this, I would have done that. You know, you really don't know how you're going to be until you're in a situation like that. And I totally get that. But I get what you're saying, too. It's hard to, because to me, I'm just like, the last thing I'm going to be doing is like, the doorman came with me when he really didn't at all. I'd be like, hey, I knocked this down. Also, can we just open this? Because where is my husband?
Yes.
Like, I'd be like, the urgency, which, sure, he was showing urgency, but it's just very odd the way he was doing it. It looks sus, and it sucks, because if he really is innocent, it just like the way
it doesn't show
the time of events and stuff. It's weird.
Thing and who all you called to. Like, I'm sorry, I wouldn't be calling her family even. I wouldn't have called her sister. I wouldn't have called anyone. I would have been focused on getting to her. That's all I would have cared about.
Yeah, yeah. Right, exactly. And like the other thing too, when it came to that 911 call, not once do you really kind of, does he mention fear of any sort or worry? Like, is she, I don't know if she's okay, or you're scared, like texting her, you're scaring me. Like, what's going on? Like, you're freaking me out. I'm going to call the cops if you don't open the door. Yeah. Like, and you're telling her like, oh, you better have a good excuse. What?
Yeah.
Like what the fuck is going on? Like all these other things. Like to me, I'm like, why are you?
That's if anything, weird. If we ever got in an argument that bad that you locked me out, or I thought you locked me out, one of my texts would probably be like, are you seriously this freaking pissed off that you're locking me out?
But then, and I'm pretty sure, and you let me know, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but if even if you messaged me that and in 10 minutes I haven't messaged you back or called you back to answer, you probably would have been like, you're starting to scare me. What's going on?
100%. Yeah. I would have probably texted you and said, can you, even if you need time, at least let me know you're okay, and I'll go and give you like a solid hour, 2 hours. I'll drive somewhere else.
Or else you're going to be worried.
You locked me out.
Right. And that's where, like, here, this whole time, he is just like impatient and annoyed and angry. Yeah. And it's just like,
it comes across like he wants to get to her because he's pissed the fuck off.
He's pissed
at her.
Off. Yeah. It's just, interesting. And also, Ellen's dad had stated that, and his mom too have stated, like, they couldn't believe that someone who said loved their daughter would call 911 like that and say those things.
Yeah.
And just like, he just expected there to be a lot more care and kindness and like love in those words that was not at all being reflected. Now, when Ellen's parents learn about her death being labeled suicide. Okay. They knew their daughter, and they honestly did not believe this. They also, I mean, at the beginning, like from what I was seeing, they were really in disbelief that their daughter could have committed suicide. We have seen that in families, though. That is a statistic. Mm-hmm. Some people just find it hard to believe, and I totally get that. But they just knew, like with her mental state, they felt instinctively like something in their gut was telling them there was more to the story than just suicide.
And always listen to that. Always trust your gut.
Very true. Very true. So while the police moved on, they're like, yes, that's suicide. The Greenbergs began investigating on their own. So they started hiring like a team of forensic experts, lawyers to help them figure out what is going on. They're not getting any answers. And when they found out that the manner of death got changed from suicide to homicide, like it wasn't even them that the police didn't call them. They found out from somebody else.
From someone else. Yes. That's wild.
Right. Which I have heard of a lot of cases like that too, which is sad because the first people that should be alerted are said family members that are related to the victim. Yes. Now, Ellen's parents hired attorney Joseph Podraza. Blah, blah, blah. I can't talk today. Ellen's parents hired attorney Joseph Podraza, who pulled together a team of independent pathologists, neuropathologists, blood spatter specialists, crime scene analysts, and medical experts. So they're going big, going home.
Everything, yeah.
Together, they began examining every available photo, autopsy note, and remaining tissue sample that they had, because there wasn't much that was preserved. What they found unanimously, literally, was that Ellen's wounds did not align with suicide. Not even remotely, they say. One of the most discussed injuries is the stab wound that penetrated Ellen's spinal cord. There was this neuropathologist, Dr. Lindsay Emery. She examined brain and spinal tissue samples that had been preserved, and she determined that the wound severed Ellen's spinal cord. So the injury would have caused instant motor dysfunction, which can lead to sudden muscle weakness, paralysis, or loss of coordination, meaning that Ellen would not have been able to hold herself upright, and she likely would have lost basic motor control. So she could have not continued stabbing herself after this wound, which is interesting.
Very.
Yes, and yet there were multiple stab wounds inflicted after the injury. Some showed no hemorrhaging, which strongly suggested that they occurred post-mortem after Ellen was already dead. Now, this alone, honestly, you would think, like, this alone would be like, all right, that's it, sealed. Yeah. This can't be suicide. That just doesn't make any sense. Exactly, but it didn't. Now, there's another forensic psychologist, a veteran forensic scientist. He reviewed the blood patterns, and she also noted that the blood flow on Ellen's clothing, the pooling on the floor, the directions of the stains, and the blood patterns did not match a person who would stab herself 20 times and moved during the act.
I told you I was sus of you.
Which, I mean, everything that I was reading, I was like, it makes sense because I don't really know about this world. Essentially, like, I don't know the science behind it. I don't know.
Yeah. So here's the thing.
Logically,
if you're stabbed or you stab yourself, and you just stab yourself once, usually you're not going to have a pull because the knife, and that's why they say if you ever get stabbed or
whatever, leave the knife in?
You leave it because that is literally what is keeping the blood from all escaping.
Well, that's a good point. And I also feel, you know what throws me off? The back. How am I going to stab myself?
And why?
Like 10 times on the back. That's insane.
That's weird. No,
and
but
then
I don't.
If you hit the spinal cord, like,
you're done, or at least paralyzed.
I don't even think Chuck Norris could do that. Like, it just wouldn't. It just doesn't
Chuck
work.
Well, Chuck
Norris
wouldn't have to stab himself. Chuck Norris would be able to, you know.
Chuck Norris would be like, "This is definitely a homicide."
Yeah.
Chuck Norris is like, "This isn't a suicide. Okay, this is not a suicide." Now, based off of this, she pretty much just says that blood tells a story. And in Ellen's case, the story was inconsistent with it being self-inflicted injuries. Her wounds suggested that she was likely stabbed while already being incapacitated, she did not move during the stabbing whatsoever, or that the scene may have been staged. So those are her three theories. So she's like, this
staged,
is what I would explain
you
it
say?
To be. Yes. And they're saying likely, right? She's not likely. Being like 100%.
Okay.
Right, because again, it's the certain lingo that they have to use, but she's saying based off like she believes that that's, yeah.
We know
most
what
likely.
Her thoughts probably were.
Now, which based off of these findings, it obviously goes against that suicide ruling. Now, forensic pathologist Dr. Wayne Ross reviewed the autopsy data and photographic evidence, and his findings were that many wounds required significant force. Some wounds were inflicted at angles impossible for it to have been done on herself. Several wounds lacked hemorrhaging, which meant that they were inflicted after she was dead. And the bruising pattern that she was having could suggest restraining or some defensive type of contact. Ellen's positioning where she was found did not really match a collapse from someone who would self-stab themselves. Yes. And he pretty much stated that this is a homicide. He's like, this is literally a homicide.
Mic drop.
Now, Dr. Henry Lee, he was well known for his involvement in the O.J. Simpson case, also reviewed Ellen's case, and his conclusion was that the manner of death should be reclassified as undetermined at minimum. Because it's either homicide, undetermined, or suicide?
Suicide, yeah. Probably.
There's probably other options. I'm just saying
that's what we're talking about. Thinking,
we don't know everything, guys, okay? We don't know.
We're not professionals.
Yes, yes. We're just like...
I'm
just a silly girl.
And I'm just the husband getting dragged along.
Dragged along the ride. No, but from which I was reading, right, that's pretty much just his way of saying that there is really no scientific basis for calling this a suicide. That's how I interpreted it. That's me. But remember the latch that the police based pretty much practically all their conclusions on? Well, independent experts that Ellen's parents hired, they actually recreated Ellen's exact model of how the scene looked at the apartment.
Okay.
As close as they could from what they had, including the swing bar lock.
Okay.
Okay. And they demonstrated multiple times that the latch could have been locked from outside.
Huh.
It could be closed if you close the door hard enough with force, like the building manager said. Huh. It could appear intact even after being broken.
Hmm.
and it is impossible to know if it was locked before Sam forced the door. So we don't really know.
Suspicious, yes. Even more.
And its position could not be used to really... Well, obviously, like, you wouldn't really be able to determine suicide or homicide from a lock. Like, that's just kind of, yeah.
Hmm.
And that's another thing to note, okay, guys? Another thing to note. We don't know when he could have broken the door down days earlier, the day before.
That's true.
We don't know. That could have just been a thing that maybe it wasn't even him. Maybe it just broke months prior to them living there.
Yeah.
For some reason, and he just never fixed it.
He could have also weakened it to make it easier to break.
That's a good point too.
And stage.
That's a good point too. Yeah. But that to me, it's like, I don't even know, like, how would you even know? You don't know when that was actually broken. It could have just been an accident. It could have been intentional. It could have been because there was a situation that
Needless to say,
sketch. Sus.
So?
So another thing to mention is that Sam, in his police report that night, okay, when the police came and took his statement, he said that the doorman came with him, obviously.
We know
not.
It's false.
False. Now, Ellen had multiple bruises across her arms, legs, and her body. But they were not fresh bruises and not all from the same day. So multiple bruises and different stages of healing means Ellen had been bruised repeatedly in the days or weeks leading up to her death. And the bruises occurred at different times. Why? Why does she have so many bruises?
Probably because she, I mean...
Well, never investigated. No one ever asked.
Well, I was going to say, isn't the typical like domestic violence thing that the husband always says, oh, she fell down the stairs.
Yeah. Where you notice bruising. Yeah.
She fell down the stairs and then she fell on a knife.
Yeah. I wish... But my other thing too that I was thinking is like, suspicious. I know certain medication causes bruising or you're more likely to bruise, but I don't know. No. I don't know about that part. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't know about that part. I don't know what she does. But yes, let alone like you're saying, if you see certain bruises and there's... I mean, you got to take all the precautions.
Just very
you can.
Suspicious.
Yes. Now, suicides by multiple self-inflicted stab wounds are extremely rare, from what I was seeing. Suicides by 20 stab wounds at that is going to be probably from the back of the head and the front are like non-existent.
You mean people that are trying to commit suicide don't try to go after the most unique, craziest, most difficult places to stab themselves?
Right. No. Yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah. I know, surprising.
Hmm.
Which she also had, I don't think I saw it, but I think they mentioned it in the Hulu documentary, I'm not entirely sure, but she had a gash on her head. So how does she get a gash on her head?
I don't know, sounds like somehow she must try to knock herself out to commit her own suicide while she was knocked out.
I know, it's interesting. Well, clinical expert Courtney Conley, she noted that people who die by suicide usually choose something quick, something that doesn't require repeated force. Like you said. Mm-hmm. And she also added that stabbing yourself 20 times is extremely rare and would be extremely difficult. And then there's also a psychological dimension to it, which I thought this was so fascinating because I don't really know about like these statistics.
Yeah.
People contemplating suicide often take steps to minimize trauma for loved ones and not maximize it, which makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
And in the Hulu docuseries that I've been referencing, it's called Death in Apartment 603. There's a forensic psychologist and behavioral analyst. They explain on the documentary that people who are planning suicide typically do not engage in mundane future-oriented tasks. They're not running errands. They're not
They're not planning for the future.
They're not planning for the next day. They're also not putting gas in your car.
To
prep for a storm. They're not doing chore-like activities.
They're not planning for a wedding.
They're not planning for a wedding. Sure. Tom is onto you. Is onto you.
I'm sorry.
Yeah,
I'm
no,
sorry.
I get it. Trust me, I get it. I get it. Because when I was reading it, I was like, it's really hard to not...
I've also been on attempted suicide scenes, and they're never... I'm sorry, it's never the way that this is. It's always...
This just is fishy.
Yes.
This is fishy.
It's extremely fishy.
It's fishy. It's very fishy. So in other words, if Ellen was planning to take her life at home that afternoon, why did she stop for gas? Why did she prepare a fruit salad? Why is she answering work emails? Why is she still grading papers? Why is she following her normal
routine?
Also,
why is she killing herself right as she's making a fruit salad?
Right, which this is another thing too that they were talking about was that as much as also most suicides statistically, people don't plan for tomorrow when they intend to die today, right? From what I was seeing, suicides can also just happen in the moment. Like, it could just be
like something that pushes you over the
pushes
edge.
Pushes you over the edge that it just happens.
And that's true too.
Yes, yes. So that's where it's like, this is so, it's so hard because you look at it both ways and you're like, my God, how complicated and complex can this be? And you know what, it sucks? We don't have, they didn't preserve the crime scene. So we would have probably had a lot more answers.
A lot more answers,
except now we just have a lot more
questions. And suspicious questions.
Now, based off of these findings and the contradiction to the police department's findings, Ellen's parents began filing lawsuits. 2015, they filed one, but it was dismissed on procedural grounds. And in 2017, it was dismissed again. Not because of lack of evidence, though, but because Pennsylvania law says that only government agencies can change the manner of death. And the Greenbergs weren't allowed to correct the record. So they did something else. They decided to go public with it.
Oh, shit.
Yep. And the country began to pay attention to them. Lately, they've been in the news a lot more because the most updated findings that we know, or just the most updated version of this case, happened last month.
Oh, yes. Shit.
Yes. So... Yeah, you crack me up. I love you.
I wasn't waiting. I was not ready for that.
You love it. You, yeah.
Yo, how many more slides can I go down?
Okay. You can start going now.
Okay.
For years, the Greenbergs pushed for answers alone, okay? But they were hiring experts, they were filing lawsuits, they were holding press conferences, but their fight really looked like a grieving family that's just trying to move mountains, because that's usually the go-to, right? You're a family member, which is different cases like this. A family member, there's some type of really tragic, inconceivable type of death that a lot of people assume like, oh my God, can the family just get over it? Like, no, it just doesn't really work like that, you know? Okay, so... Guys, I will post this on socials, but there is a demonstration of like how many, it pretty much show where all her stab wounds are. So when you visually see that, that already in itself is hard for me to believe. It was hard for me to believe just hearing it. You know what I mean? But when you visually see it,
here's the
it just
thing
doesn't
to
make
me.
Sense how she
even
would stab
if you
herself.
Are super medically ill or mentally ill is what I was trying to say. Typically, most suicides you see, the hesitation stab or the hesitation.
Oh yeah, the hesitation.
Because
wounds,
you, as unfortunately with suicides, typically there is that little bit of hesitation because you know you're about to inflict pain to yourself.
Right.
So there's still part of your mind, even though you're in this mentality, this sad mentality. Part of your mind is still trying to fight that.
Which, and that's when I was like, when I was reading, that's why I'm like, I think from what I was seeing, there was no hesitation wounds, but I do feel like they had said something that maybe there was one or two. But to me, I'm like, even if there was one or two, right? Even if there was a few, to me, I'm like 20 stab wounds.
And based on, guys, if you do look at this photo, again, it's gruesome.
It's just a
3D because
model.
It is,
yeah.
But it's gruesome,
but you know,
just to think about, but it's also just... to think about put
visually
yourself
seeing
in those shoes.
It. Yeah, visually seeing it is.
And one, I'm sorry, I really, truly have never heard of a suicide where somebody stabbed themselves in the back.
I know. The back of the head, the neck, the shoulder, the different angles, the front, like that so many times. To the fact where you stab yourself in the heart.
Yeah, it's, no.
Yeah. Well, and they said that. They're like, you know what? They're, what is it? You guys let me know if you guys know more, but from what I was seeing, there really isn't another case like this to compare it to say, oh, you know, we have seen this before.
Yeah.
You know, this has happened before. Nothing really comes close to it. So that's what makes it also so
suspicious.
Suspicious.
Because
this
isn't
it
normal.
It can't be suicide. Yeah. It just can't be, just let alone with like the spinal cord, or just imagine stabbing yourself 20 times. That's, I don't know. That's insane. Now for years, the Greenbergs were pushing for answers, okay? For years. I'm talking 14 plus. This is still happening as we speak, guys. Then, slowly, the story began spreading. True crime podcasts were picking it up. We've got documentaries. I mean, me and you are talking about it. The journalists are digging up public records. There's national outlets that began writing about the contradictions, the unexplained injuries, the questions that an investigation just doesn't even answer. It just, all that. And the more people learned about it, the more impossible for this official narrative to be what it is. Are you seeing the latch right now? Yeah.
Yeah, because so here's my other thing too on the latch, right?
Tom's back on the latch, guys.
Just because one, there's a bunch of different things that I don't feel like are correct or look correct. And I don't know. I just...
What do you mean? Like, what part of it? In the latch?
Yeah, I personally, I'm looking at this and... Hold on.
What?
Wait, am I looking at this correct? The latch looks like it's going toward, like it's angled up and
yeah,
towards.
Yeah, it seems kind of weird. I wasn't sure. I was trying to look at different photos of the latch.
Whatever. Either way.
Either way,
there's
sus.
Just a bunch of weird stuff between the knife, the stabbings, and where the stabbings were, and yeah. The mark on the head. It just doesn't make sense to me.
And there is a photo, yes, that's blurred out when I was watching one of the documentaries. It's blurred out, but you can kind of see where she is. And it's so, I mean, it breaks my heart just looking at it. But it just doesn't, it just can't be. It just, no. It's so hard to even, I mean, at least rule it undetermined.
Yeah.
So we can just find more answers. We're not saying it, you know, there's... We're not saying it's got to be him, but yeah, this just doesn't make any
sense. It doesn't make sense.
It doesn't
and
make
even
sense.
If it wasn't him, it looks like it had to have been a robbery or not even a robbery. Because to me, a robbery gone wrong, you don't stab somebody this
missing.
Many times.
Yeah, and there's nothing missing.
Yeah.
Well, other than that, his uncle took her laptop and all that, which they do give it back. But to me, it's also like, we don't know now. It's tainted. It's tainted evidence.
Also, why did you need to take that, though?
It's weird. Why out
it
of everything you take
weird.
All that?
It's all weird. I'm sorry for people that maybe are innocent and just do some weird shit.
I know.
But
I do feel
at the
bad
same
about
time,
that. That's horrible.
In aspects like this, why, especially as a lawyer, why wouldn't you tell your nephew... Do not touch anything.
Right. If
do
you were
not
in,
move
if you
anything.
Were innocent.
Do not pick any of
right.
her stuff up. Don't touch the apartment.
Don't go back.
Let the investigators finish
out.
Their
yeah.
thing.
Come hang out with me.
That way you are fully cleared. Because now everything you've done has now made not just you, but also your nephew
right.
look extremely suspicious.
Right.
In this whole crime.
And I find it, because to me, I'm like, well, they thought it was a suicide. But I'm like, still, why would you go in and just
take
her,
laptop,
and her phone?
That's
Get
where
your
it doesn't
laptop
make sense.
Out the bag.
Okay,
your phone.
TSA.
Sorry,
here
TSA
we go.
Agent, my bad. But yeah, no, that's where to me, I'm like, huh? That I just,
so,
you're not even her family.
I'm
that's
just
weird.
Curious, though.
Yeah, what?
When do we get to find out what this latest update is? That you said came out.
All right. Well, in 2024, the case landed before Judge Linda Carpenter, who reviewed thousands of pages of evidence, expert reports, and procedural records. Her reaction was pretty much blunt. She suggested that they made a huge mistake, that this case left her extremely troubled. She criticized all the delays. She questioned the logic behind the suicide ruling, and she urged officials to take this case a lot more seriously. Her role is pretty much limited, but the fact that she's even speaking on it is like powerful enough because this is like the first real person in power that's like, something's going on here and this is strange. Now in February of 2025, we're in this year now, after more than a decade of fighting, the city of Philadelphia reached a settlement with the Greensburg family. As part of the agreement, the city paid a monetary amount. We don't know how much, doesn't really matter, but that's what they did. The city agreed to an independent review of Ellen's death. The independent review would be conducted outside of city influence, and the case would finally get another official look. Because at this point,
oh, shit.
They don't want to do anything. Like, the police department is like, no, I don't want to do anything.
Because they already have enough bad press, and they just had to make a settlement because, obviously, wrongdoing without them admitting that there was wrongdoing.
Well, the most shocking development came from within the medical examiner's office itself.
Oh, shit.
Dr. Osborne, the ME who originally changed Ellen's manner of death from homicide to suicide, signed a sworn affidavit stating that he no longer stood by the suicide ruling. The new evidence contradicted that conclusion, and the manner of death should be revised. The case required further review, he said. A signed affidavit, man. This was explosive. The man who had signed the death certificate, who changed the ruling, who had been at the center of the controversy, was now saying that the suicide ruling should not stand.
Wow.
Should not stand. And for the first time, the official record had begun to crack. Because before, what was it? The ME kept saying, like, no, it's a suicide. It's a suicide. Mm-hmm. It's a suicide. And now he's saying it isn't. Also, what is going on? Like, who are we covering up for? Can we just... Come on.
Just let's do it.
Yeah, just what just is wrong with you?
There's, it. You there's obviously
people,
know.
There's people here that need to know what happened to their daughter. And
even if you can't put a person behind bars for it...
We need answers.
As long as somebody can at least know.
Yeah. No, seriously. For real. Now, shortly after the settlement, Philadelphia's current chief medical examiner, Dr. Lindsay Simon, released a 32-page report reaffirming the suicide ruling. I don't know. They must be paying... It's weird. How do we go from one ME saying homicide, suicide, back to homicide,
back to suicide.
Now the new ME is like, no, it's definitely suicide. She claimed in this 32-page report that Ellen's anxiety was significant, that Ellen feared her grades might reveal that she overinflated like student scores, that Ellen would have been physically capable of stabbing herself, that the pattern of wounds was consistent with self-infliction, in her opinion. The original ruling was still valid, she said. She believed. Which to me is interesting.
I want to see this medical examiner, Miss Lindsay. Not even going to call you a doctor.
But okay, now here's where things get messy, though. She's a doctor.
I know.
You're just upset because this doesn't make any sense.
Because I want to see her take, not a knife, a taser. I want to see you tase yourself the same amount of times in the same spots to prove that it'd be possible to keep doing it.
Tommy's over it. Yeah. But that's not a bad...
Because I'm sorry. That's a non-lethal way. You're still causing harm.
Right, but you're...
But you're going to be able to prove to me that...
20 times isn't... Front and back. Yeah,
exactly.
Now, the most... It's getting messy. We're getting messy here. Dr. Simon added 3 additional superficial stab wounds and 20 more bruises to the official record. Details that apparently had not been included in earlier documentation. So now we're finding...
Mm-hmm.
Other details. Now, as you can imagine, Ellen's parents were horrified. Their attorney called the report deeply flawed, scientifically unsound, and unsupported by modern forensic analysis. The lawyer that they have, Joseph Paldazio, I'm so sorry. Horrible. But their lawyer was the whole time, they're like, something is going on here, and no one wants to give his answer. He is so... well-spoken, where he can probably make building a NASA rocket ship easy to understand. Like, the way he was describing it, I was like, wow, this was your calling, my guy. And I don't even know you. I'm just listening to you on this, like, documentary.
I love you.
But the way he was explaining, so I was like, yo, you know what? I get it. I totally get it. But anyways, the settlement required an independent review by October 14th of 2005. Dun, dun, dun. Last year. I mean, last
2025?
Month.
2025.
What did I say?
You said 2005.
Whoa.
Throwback.
Whoa.
You guys are a little late.
Whoa. Well.
All right. So 2025.
It's last month, right? So there should be an update. This was the last update was October 14th. Well.
And?
When the deadline arrived, no report was released.
Huh.
No update was provided. No progress was shared with the Greenbergs. Judge Carpenter had specifically warned the city against delays, and her warnings were ignored. As of late 2025, the independent review remains incomplete or unreleased, and Ellen's manner of death is still officially suicide.
Wow.
Yeah, which is important to mention that her family also believes that she did not die by suicide, okay?
I mean, I wouldn't either.
Yeah. But the thing is, okay, because we're going to get into theories here. If you leave a ruling as suicide, a cause of death is suicide, then there's no further investigation that needs to be had. So why can't you just put undetermined? Again, not saying, even if he is innocent, right? That's fine. You don't have to rule it a homicide, but something happened.
Yeah.
Something happened. So why would you not do undetermined? But because it is, that's what that leads to one of our theories, okay? That the police just didn't want to admit fault, okay? Our theories is that the suicide theory is easier. They rushed to judgment. The storm limited their resources.
And the thing is, we've seen this time after time
again.
We've
seen this happen,
How many cases were ruled a suicide that ended up later on actually being... turned over to be a homicide.
Yeah, because they don't want to acknowledge.
Yes.
They don't want to acknowledge that. Yeah. And the city apparently has a history of resisting corrections, Okay, I didn't know that. But changing the ruling now would also expose some type of liability, and officials prefer administration simplicity over public scrutiny, which, I mean, I feel like a lot of police departments are like mm-hmm. that. But it's unfortunate because something happened. Sometimes it's, you know what, it's okay to be wrong. It's all right.
I think that's the biggest struggle is that as a law enforcement officer, even the military and federal officers,
take a lot of pride.
You have to, because prime example, the FBI, anytime they've had corrupt people inside, it is extremely tough, and the FBI tries to keep it as quiet as possible, because that is you think of the FBI as like the biggest and the best and the most highly respected.
Yeah,
so then all of a sudden
CIA.
Something bad happens internally, and
it reflects poorly on the agency.
So I will say, in that aspect, I get it, but at the same time,
but this
you're
feels
not going to be perfect.
Yeah, this feels worse, like, though. It
just admit
feel like it
if you know it's wrong, just admit it, or at least put, hey, unfortunately, we can't fully determine it one way or another.
Yeah,
so undetermined.
And I'm sure there's a lot of politics in that. I mean, you can only
for
imagine.
Sure.
So there's definitely. I mean, we're over here like, yeah, that might just be a drop in the bucket, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But I totally get what you're saying, because to me, the whole time I'm like, well, just you could just say that. So at this point, it's like, well, it seems like they just don't want to back that. That's one of the theories. They just don't want to backtrack because it just wouldn't look good. Mm-hmm. And we're having to reopen everything, it's just going to get messier and it's going to be even more difficult. And so the ruling stayed. That's one theory. The second theory is the suicide theory. Okay. We've got the swing bar latch appeared to be locked. Sam reported Ellen had been anxious. There were no signs of forced entry. All this happens. But again, that just doesn't add up, okay?
It doesn't.
Especially just let alone with the behavioral contradictions, right? Your typical suicide, particularly impulsive ones, often involve isolation, or there's an obvious acute distress. Maybe there's a sudden emotional break. Maybe there's withdrawal. Maybe giving away possessions or some type of behavior that would signal some type of crisis.
Yeah.
And from what they were saying, even friends and family, they're like, well, she didn't express these things. She didn't come off like that. But again, it's also hard because how many times do we hear about certain suicides,
that
even in celebrities?
Weren't even expecting.
They weren't expecting because that's just how... Like, quick it comes. So, again, that is one of the theories, okay? Theory number three. She could have been murdered by an unknown assailant. The intruder theory, okay? They dismissed this just because the latch was locked. I mean, the freaking latch. Like, this is all they care about is this latch.
This damn latch.
There was no forced entry. The storm outside would have made it very difficult to access. But... later, when they do the investigation and they figure out, hey, listen, the door could have been latched from the outside. Mm-hmm. So now they're like, this could be a theory. Maybe somebody came in that wasn't supposed to be there.
Yeah.
But again, I would find that weird because they didn't steal anything. So what was the whole point? You just came and you randomly stumbled across apartment 603?
To me, it would have had to been a targeted attack.
Right. So that's what they were saying, that the problem with this theory, though, is that there is no evidence of someone entering the building.
For that,
a break-in, stolen items, a struggle in any of the other rooms.
It would have had to been a neighbor or something.
Yeah. And it was just in the kitchen.
Yeah.
Like, it's just
in the
kitchen.
It's just very odd.
It's very, very odd. Okay. And the last and final theory is that she was murdered by someone she knew.
Hmm.
The common theory. Now, this is obviously supported by many, I mean, a lot of people who know about the case and just forensic experts and viewers and listeners all around the country. But you've got all those things to consider, right? The locked door, the hour-long delay, the missing phone records, apparently, right? Because we don't have everything. The calls to two lawyers before calling 911, the contradiction in the doorman's story, the bruises, the spinal injury, cord injury that she did, the staging... kind of looks like it was staged. Some of the experts were
just
saying.
Just all very odd.
Yeah, and her uninterrupted routine before she committed suicide, quote unquote, right? So this theory does not accuse anyone by name, okay? Because... but it does explore the possibility of the theory that the killer was either led into the apartment, was already inside, or someone with intimate access.
Hmm.
And another thing that I just want to mention too is that according to multiple legal findings, Sam, he called his uncle and his cousin, who were both lawyers, right, before calling 911, before breaking into the apartment, before really like doing much here, okay? Mm-hmm. So it just kind of raises questions about his mindset.
Yeah.
What was his priorities at the time? Because it didn't seem like
he was really that stressed or anything.
Yeah, no. About her, essentially. I mean, and again, I get it. Everybody's going to react differently. Not everybody has the same.
But still.
Yes, it's just very odd. And what he probably believed had happened inside, right? All we know is that we have that hour gap, 5:30 to 6:30. Sam, and all we really have is Sam's interpretation of how this timeline
worked. Yeah.
That's really all we know. Because we don't even have, the crime scene to even go off of. Now, where the case stands today, we still don't really have many answers yet. Mm-hmm. But the minute that we do, we will do an updated episode of just kind of like the most updated recent
updates on that. We'll be waiting on behalf of the listeners.
On behalf of the listeners. Now, do you want to know where Sam is today?
Yes. Where's Sam, though? Because we had all this shit go down. And this guy.
You're like, where is G Sam?
Well, is he sad? Did he not get re-engaged? Because I probably wouldn't be able to if I really truly loved my fiance.
It's always so upset with. I know.
Just saying.
Well, remember, he's never been charged with a crime. It's all allegedly. But he has never really been publicly named as a suspect. And he also doesn't really speak. He's very private, has a very private life.
I would too.
But he continues to maintain that he says that Ellen took her own life. Like he says that Ellen is that. Mm-hmm. Yes. That Ellen took her own life. Today, Sam is married. He is a father.
Oh.
He got married, I think, like 3 years after Ellen passed.
Oh, only 3 years?
Tom's like, wow. You should be.
Something so traumatic and it only took you 3 years to get over that?
I know.
Sorry.
He lives a very private life. You're not entertaining him whatsoever. And he's just working as a freelance senior media producer. Now, he rarely speaks publicly about the case, if at all, honestly. He only spoke about it once that I could find. And it's because most recently about Ellen and an email that was sent to CNN because the reporter was trying to interview him with some questions. But he did respond back to the reporter. And the reporter's name was Thomas.
Oh.
So I'm going to read it. Thomas, when Ellen took her own life, it left me bewildered. She was a wonderful and kind person who had everything to live for. When she died, a part of me died with her. Unimaginably, in the years that have passed, I have had to endure the unimaginable passing of my future wife and the pathetic and despicable attempts to desecrate my reputation and her privacy by creating a narrative that embraces lies, distortions, and falsehoods in order to avoid the truth. Mental illness is very real and has many victims. I hope and pray that you never lose someone you love like I did to a terrible disease and then be accused by ignorant and misinformed people of causing her death. If you're only writing a truthful story, dig deeper and please do some good by raising awareness for mental health. Best, Sam. Or SG, he says.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And that is our episode for today. Sorry for taking you for a loop.
You know, it's okay. I think the email was very respectable. Nice, good response.
Okay.
I'm still not 100% buying it. I appreciate that, yes, mental health is a very real
thing. Very important. Yes. Yes. And there are many victims.
People should make sure they are taking care of their friends and family, checking in on those that get quiet at times or separate themselves.
Or even the happy ones.
Even the happy ones.
Even the happy ones. Because you never know.
Mm-hmm.
I agree. I 100% agree with that.
Again, look at Robin Williams. Nobody in a million years would have thought that that man was super depressed because he always made everyone else laugh.
Yeah.
So, while I do agree with that, this email also, to me, gave a lawyer assisted with writing it.
Oh, I could see that. That's just
my thought.
And I think at this point,
he has to be true. Yes. To be fair, if he is innocent, I would also probably have a lawyer write everything, yeah, too, if people, right, were coming after me.
But if he's guilty, he would still, yes, have a lawyer writing after
I
him.
I would also,
so
yeah,
that's what I mean.
Either way.
Like, that's what I mean. It's just crazy.
I think
it's so
safe
complex
to say where my mind is.
Thomas, it is just so strange. But the thing that really blows my mind is that, okay, if you don't want to rule it a homicide, that's fine. But rule it undetermined. It is,
yeah,
not a suicide. It does not sound like a suicide. It
I'm
just
sorry.
Does not.
I was not a firefighter very long at all. But of the suicides I did see, or the attempted suicides I saw, it was never anything this crazy.
Yeah.
And again, I only saw two, three.
That's too many, but yeah.
But at the same time, I just personally, I've never had a friend that's in the fire industry or an EMT or a first responder,
right,
ever talk about seeing something this wild and drastic
and
for a suicide.
Claiming it's a suicide. Yeah,
yeah.
Yeah. No, it's just, and like I said, from what I was seeing, they don't really have another case to kind of base it off of, you know, to be like, oh, well, this,
yes,
happened in said state with said person,
yeah,
said victim.
And again, also, I'm sorry, but the way that the phone call went, 2911.
I know, it was sus, man. It was so sus.
That to me.
And I hate being that person, but damn.
There were certain parts
that
I was like, oh, yeah, you sound distraught. But then there were other parts that I'm
sitting
here.
He's like, can you just get here already?
Yeah.
I don't know.
And it just, there's a lot of ways that I could see and try to play devil's advocate. And I could try to take,
right,
this either way.
Right.
It's just, to me, I feel like the evidence itself, the little evidence that we have,
yeah, yeah,
is all leaning one way.
Right.
And maybe to medical examiners and detectives and everything, based off that little evidence we have, maybe that lean is only like a 60-40 lean, but...
Yeah, but we're leaning.
Yeah.
Man, there, you got to take that into account. Like, we're leaning. It's just, oh my God.
And
it
to
is
me,
so...
that is what ultimately... the undetermined,
right, exactly,
cause of death that's used
let
for.
Us
if
find
you
more
cannot
100% info.
Definitively say
one or the other,
then it's undetermined.
And that's when I get into the conspiracy of like, well, the thought process that people have of, well, if we put undetermined, then that means that the case is still open, so it can still be investigated. It still should be being investigated. So,
mm-hmm,
again, why can't we do that? Like, are we hiding something? Like, what's going on? It's weird.
Hopefully in the next few weeks we end up getting an update.
Yes, I hope so too, because
and again,
Ellen's parents
not,
are not,
yes,
are
I was
not
gonna
stopping.
Say not for anyone but her parents.
Yeah, but her parents, seriously, because they said that they're gonna fight until their last dying breath to find out what happened to
and
their daughter.
I won't lie, part of me also wishes and hopes that if the world doesn't get an answer, at least it's
they,
a private,
yeah,
answer to her parents where they can publicly state, hey, we can't say
we're,
what
we're
not disclosing
now.
What,
yeah,
the ultimate cause was ruled, but we ultimately,
right,
were given a cause of death,
yeah,
and we're happy that we were able to receive that news.
Just so they can also get some peace.
Get closure.
Because,
yes.
Yeah, some closure. Like, that's, yeah.
Jesus Christ, man.
Well, thanks for joining us today, guys. On Macabre Mondays. Don't forget to subscribe so you don't miss a single episode.
Can't wait to cover some ghost stories.
You can find us wherever you listen to podcasts. And if you know a little bit more about today or more about today's episode, let us know, because...
Damn, you've gotten pretty good at doing that.
What?
Just like going off through your lines.
Off
that's
of my lives.
Good.
I'm cool. I'm not going to lie. I'm cool.
All
but
right.
Let us know. We'd love to learn.
All right. Yo, we'd love to hear from you. Seriously, we'd love to hear from you. If you have a story that's strange, sinister, or downright spooky, does not matter how small or big you might think it is, send it our way. You can email us at macabremondayspodcast@gmail.com or jump over to our website, macabremondays.com, to submit your story. Yours just might be featured in an upcoming listener episode, and if you've not listened to the recent ones, they're good.
So good.
And we have had some solid listener full episode,
yeah,
submissions that
so,
oh,
good, so good. Follow us on social media by searching Macabre Mondays for photos of today's episode, updates, and a little extra spooky fun. Thank you guys for holding us.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
yes,
yeah,
thank you.
It's sending so many beautiful messages.
It was very nice to be able to be seen.
Thank you guys so much.
So thank you.
Seriously. We'll see you next Monday for another Sinister, Strange, and Spooky episode. Stay tuned. More mystery is just around the corner. But until then, stay spooky and stay safe, friends.
I wish I could do that.
Try it.
I'll take care for that.
Oh, it's your lips. That was good, though. Just like that.
Yeah, it just doesn't work when I try.
Just like that.
All right.
Bye.
Bye.